This is the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Radio is the sound of Chicago.
720 WGN.
612 back in the Showcase studio after... Were you guys in here yesterday?
Yes.
Yes, and it was lovely.
We have the new... This is the Allstate Showcase studio. And we have new... Well, I don't know what you call this. Is it wall wrap?
Wall mural?
New graphics.
Skyline. It's good.
Yeah.
Good.
Beautiful.
Skyline. Allstate. Chicago's own good hands. Thank you, Allstate, for the partnership and for paying my... You know, salary. I don't think they pay all of it, but, you know, they're nice folks. And we also decorated up for Christmas. So we got elves. And do we have the Santa Claus halfway down the chimney again?
Yes. His legs are sticking out. Thanks, treetime.com.
Thank you, Treetime, for frightening children as they walk by as well. But Santa's okay, kids. Treetime is another fine partner of this radio station. And, they hosted Dean and Dean's mom the other day, and I think Dean's mom made yogurt. Is that accurate or not?
I believe that's what he was talking about, yes. So. I wonder how it turned out.
Well, I don't know. We'll find out about that and other important things as the morning goes on. Chuck Todd later, Nick in just a few minutes. We have a doctor, is it Sabul? Is that correct, the pronunciation, Dr. Sabul? Dr. Salul. Is it Salul or Sabul? I don't know. Sandberg will correct me in a moment. But the doctor from Syria who works with Northwestern Hospital now will speak to the nightmare that continues in Syria. There were airstrikes in Aleppo that took out a children's hospital, amongst other places, killing kids, and Russia continues to say they have nothing to do with it. We'll get into that. We'll get into Mayor Rahm, who will be live in studio later, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, also Sheriff Tom Dart after 8 o'clock. On something called cashless bond. So, Andy, when you get arrested, and we know you will.
Yeah, it's bound to happen.
You may not have to bond your way out of jail.
Really?
Yeah, you may be able to get out based on a background check and, you know, relatively good behavior.
Relatively.
Do you have a prison name that you go by?
No, okay. No.
Troy
Murray. He's got to have a middle name. You always have a middle name like Andrew James.
He's Mazur. Knuckles. He's Knuckles. Andrew Knuckles Mazur. And then Troy Murray later on, Hawks, among other things. And are we doing a Wang? We got to do the Wang Dang Doodle picks today.
Oh, really? Man.
With nobody here.
I was going to say.
What do you mean? We're here.
Oh, and it's gone. Andrea's gone. Oh, we'll just pick for
yeah,
them.
The Duke Care captain's not here. And you're going to have to stand in.
All right.
So that's part of the deal when you take over for Innit.
Okay.
So, did y'all have a good day yesterday? Did you enjoy me not being here? By the way, I heard you mocking me yesterday.
What did I say?
5 minutes I heard of the show.
What did I say? About the lights?
No, it wasn't the lights. It was something else. I don't remember what it was. But
trying to stop her.
There was open mocking going on, and you literally said, well, I know he's not listening. You never know when I'm not listening.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'll go back and have my people check the tape. So, at 6:15, why don't you do the traffic for us, and we'll come back with Nick here in a few minutes, find out what movies are coming out this weekend.
What to see, what's out at the show, oh, I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on GN's Cochran Show, and what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
6:19 now, and Nick is brought to you by Andy Mazur. Andy Mazur, first in sports when Annette's not sitting there. That's Andy Mazur, except no substitutes. Thank you, Andy.
Proud to sponsor.
I just had a Nick, by the way. I want to make one correction. I said Dr. Salul is with Northwestern. He's actually with Advocate Christ in Oaklawn. Okay. Nick is joining us now. Nick's got his big movie Saturday night, which I have every intention to attend.
Yes. It's.
By the way, am I paying to get in?
I think there are 9 seats left.
Am I paying to get in?
Well, no, you're Steve Cochran.
Okay, good, because I don't like to pay, you know. That's why you get into show business, free movie tickets from Nick.
That's right. That's everybody's dream, isn't it?
So now here's the other problem we have, you know, because you know my policy, and you may not be familiar with this.
Okay.
I want to be invited to everything, but I really don't plan on showing up at much.
It's always nice to be invited.
Yeah. That's my policy. Yeah. But in this case, because Nick and I are friends and have been forever, and I haven't made one of these movies because he has them out at the ungodly hour of 7:30 or 8 o'clock on a weeknight.
On Tuesday nights, yeah, yeah. You're normally.
Can't. Who stays up till that? I mean, it's crazy talk. But this on a Saturday night, I think I can be there.
You can
on top of the fact that I'm off next week.
Even better.
I'm off next week. Yeah. Pete McMurray's coming back.
Oh, my. I'm off next week, too.
Yeah. So let me just do a head count here. Annette, no. Do we know if Darlis is back by then? When is she coming back?
I don't know.
Oh, she's probably not back till Sunday, right?
Well, she's on vacation.
No, I remember her saying she wouldn't be able to make it Saturday.
Okay. Jake, are you coming to next movie? Turn your microphone on. It's radio. It helps when you just do more than shake your head.
I cannot attend, unfortunately.
Why? What are you doing?
Hey.
Mike, what are you doing?
Oh, I have my niece's first birthday party.
Well, she's not even going to know you're at the movie.
That's not
man.
Important. Yeah.
Can't you do a drive-by?
Hey, by the way, you know what Jake and I have in common?
I don't.
We're both doing Movember.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Are you sure that's not Bennett?
Oh, it is Bennett. Sorry. That's right. It is Bennett, isn't it? Yeah, that's right.
Because I'm looking at Jake, and he looks clean-shaven to me.
He looks clean-shaven. No, it's Bennett. Right. I'm sorry. What a jerk I am. Anyway, we're
but
doing...
No, you'll appreciate this reference, because you and I don't see each other face-to-face much anymore. But Bennett looks to me like Tom Cruise's evil assistant in Valkyrie. He looks like... Bennett, you know, he's a tall, thin kid, right? And he looks like a guy pretending to be a Nazi sympathizer right before he tries to kill Hitler.
I got to tell you, that only you would pull that reference out, make a Valkyrie reference.
I know you'll see it. The minute you see Bennett, you'll see it. All right, Sandberg, are you going Saturday night?
I saw him this morning.
Oh, you did? Don't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I'm laughing so hard.
All right. Now, as long as you see it. Sandberg, are you going to be there Saturday night?
I am not going. My stepdaughter is in the Winnetka Community Theater's production of Annie, which is sold out. So.
What time was the show?
There's two shows.
When are the shows?
12:30 and I think 4.
Oh, what, the 4 o'clock show? What is it, 5 hours long?
But then my mother-in-law's in town and I have to hang out with her.
Your mother-in-law's in town, a perfect excuse for you not to see your mother-in-law Saturday night and come to the movie.
I like what you're thinking there. But all right, you won't have to talk to her because the movie's like 10 hours long. We can't sit through Annie and then go to a movie. I can't do that. I'm going to need to be in pajamas at that point.
Okay, so your excuse is BS. Your excuse using your daughter is complete nonsense.
Possibly.
Yeah, okay. All right, so far the only friend you have on this show is me. Andy, will you be there?
I was not privy to the information about the show.
Okay, it's Thursday. What are you doing?
Well, I have a neighborhood dinner thing that we do for the pre-Thanksgiving, but the entire neighborhood gets together for dinner.
All right, and finally, the woman that refuses to leave home for, you know, you go out less than Sandberg does.
I know, it's Saturday night, and I was so excited it was Saturday night.
And?
I got, well, there's like 3 other things going on, and I'm trying to decide which one I'm going to attend.
So you actually have 3 other things that you're trying to decide than support
Yes,
Nick.
It's a weird night. So, I mean,
what are the
like,
things?
Well, one's like a girls' night that we haven't decided on
yet. Oh, couldn't do
yet.
That again. What's the other one?
A wine tasting event.
Oh, yeah. We'll run out of wine. Yeah. Uh-huh. And the third?
Another was a dancing thing I was going to go to.
Oh, yeah. They all sound like really firm commitments, don't they, Nick?
No, they don't. Well, Nick, this is my issue. I'm not a big fan of The Godfather. I hate to say it.
Are you a fan of Nick?
Oh.
I love Nick. I love popcorn. I love the movies. I love all that stuff. It's sure. just...
Do you love free parking?
3 hours with The Godfather. Yeah. It gets long.
A lot going on out there. This is the reason there's only 9 seats left.
I don't
want
to see that horse's head and then try to go to bed.
Well, you don't have to look. You can look away at that point.
But
all right, Nick,
you,
so far I'm the only one that supports you.
Well,
it's just going to be me and you, Steve.
I would like to. We will reconvene after the holiday and see if you actually support him. Yes, exactly.
Let me explain something.
We'll see what happens.
I've seen the movie. If I drive by for 10 minutes, that's 10 minutes longer than you guys have done. So okay.
Yeah, you could go like halfway through, but Nick does that thing at the end. You want to hear that? When he talks,
you
answers
think that's
questions.
I love that you're choreographing the night that you're not attending.
Isn't that what you do, Nick?
I do, yes. I do an intro, and then we talk about the movie afterwards, yeah.
Yeah, you got to stay for that.
Yeah.
And he'll know. The lights will go up, and he'll see that you're not there.
Well, he doesn't have to look for you, does he? 6:24.
I know you guys have a list
Oops,
to get to
the bathroom.
With Nick, but can I mention something about what your test from yesterday? Something funny that was on TV last night?
Oh, by the way, I had a stress test yesterday. It's a routine stress test.
Oh. Yeah.
I said, just replay election night. I don't need to do a treadmill test today.
Yes.
But no, it was a treadmill test. Everything's fine. They said, oh, see you next time.
But so on Modern Family last night, the grandpa, Pritchard, whatever,
the old guy Pritchard. On the show. I love that you yeah. thought of me after That'd be you Jay. Thought of the old guy.
Yeah, that guy. Jay. He Jay, yes. He also had a bad stress
Remember
test.
When I was hip.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
He had a bad stress test, so he was wearing this monitor on his wrist, and when his blood pressure would go up, it would start beeping, so he was supposed to relax. And to make himself relax, he started singing Summer Breeze makes me feel fine. Yeah. And I thought of you because you like music from that time.
It's not music from that time. This isn't a period piece for you. It's the 70s. It's when I grew up.
But Seals
I
and Crofts.
Right. At least it wasn't bread.
Pat's like, oh, my God, you have to bring this up to Steve, you know, for so to relax
my God,
yourself.
This goes back to the 70s. Music from another era.
Summer Breeze.
When dinosaurs walked
from
the
another
earth.
Century.
It was dinosaurs, Seals and Crofts, and bread.
If I remember correctly, Seals and Crofts wrote the lyrics in Sanskrit.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yes, there were cave writings that they were finally able to break down. That's how we finally heard about it. All right, so man, I'm glad I came in today. It's 6:26, and let's talk about Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Yeah, Fantastic Beasts, Where to Find Them is the new film from the world of Harry Potter. It doesn't involve Harry Potter characters, but it involves that world. It's written by J.K. Rowling, directed by David Yates, who directed 5 of the Harry Potter movies. It's getting great reviews. Eddie Redmayne plays a guy who's studying all these fantastic beasts. He's got a suitcase full of them. He arrives in New York. Suitcase opens. Beasts escape. Colin Farrell's the bad guy, and magic flies all over the place. I hear really great things about it, and I'm a huge fan of the Harry Potter books and movies, and I'm really looking forward to it.
I like Colin Farrell. I think he's terrific.
Oh, yeah, I love him.
Yeah.
He's great. And he's going to really – I think he's going to be great because – he's a great actor, but, you know, this guy's capable of having so much fun when he plays a villain.
Yeah.
And he plays the villain here. I think he's going to be fabulous.
And Colin Farrell is, what, 45-ish maybe now?
He's around that age, yeah, 45, 46.
But he seems to be embracing the aging and the changing of parts from the leading man with the accent women fall for to, you know, whatever cool thing fits the need for the moment.
The stuff that's happened in his personal life has changed him a lot. I remember back when he first hit the scene, you know, he was screwing everything that moved. He was drinking like a lunatic, and he had this bad boy image. But since now he's settled down. He's got 2 kids. He's married. The way he conducts himself during interviews is completely different, and he keeps maturing not only as a person but as an actor. And
correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe you don't know either, but doesn't he have a special needs child?
Because
I think that was a real life changer for him, as it is for anybody. You're right. A mature guy. And he was a great actor when he was nuts. But
I agree. I totally agree. Yeah.
He seems to be a more enjoyable human now. What's the edge of 17?
Oh, it stars Hayley Stanfield, who was in, you remember her from True Grit. She played the young girl in True Grit in the remake of True Grit with Jeff Bridges. This is a coming-of-age comedy where her best friend, she's in high school, and her best friend starts dating her older brother, and she just can't come to grips with it. She's having a horrible time. And Woody Harrelson plays her weirdo teacher advisor.
Is that as creepy as it sounds on paper?
No, I don't know. I haven't seen it. James L. Brooks is the creative force behind this.
Oh, really?
The woman who wrote, he executive produced it. The woman who wrote it wrote a movie called Postgrad, which stars Rory Gilmore, Alexis Bledel, and that was a really fun movie. And this one looks great. And Hayley Stanfield is a great,
it's pretty good team.
She's a great actress. Yeah.
And do they use the Stevie Nicks song?
I do not know. I saw an interview with her, and they do say that the movie is indeed named after that song for sure. Whether it's on the soundtrack or not, I'm not sure, but it was inspired by that song.
I just love the idea that the audience that's a core audience for the movie would have no idea what the song is or who's singing it.
They may as well have used Bread.
From a decade called the 70s. Bleed for This.
Bleed for This is a boxing film which stars Miles Teller as a very successful up-and-coming boxer who gets into a really horrible near-fatal car accident and breaks his neck. And is told that he'll never be able to fight again, but he fights back and tries to to get back into the game and start boxing again. And his manager is played by Aaron Eckhart. I'm not sure if this is based on a true story. I don't think it is, but I think it might be inspired by something that may have happened, but they loosely it was inspired by. And I've heard mixed things about this. The trailer looks pretty interesting. I'm a fan of Miles Teller, and I think Aaron Eckhart is going to make it interesting. He's kind of doing the old sort of catcher. He's doing the Mickey thing, you know, from Rocky. Yeah, you're not going to be able to train. He's doing stuff like that.
It's weird casting, right? Because Miles Teller you wouldn't think of as an athlete, let alone a boxer. And Aaron Eckhart is, well, here's another word from the 70s, a yuppie.
Yeah. But no, I mean, Teller got all buff. I mean, he worked out like a maniac. And he's like, I haven't seen the movie, but in the trailers, he's completely buff. Like, he really put on a lot of muscle and a lot of weight for the film.
I'm told Bleed for This is based on a true story of Vinny Paz, P-A-Z. I don't know Vinny's story, but Vinny the Pazmanian Devil.
Right.
A local Providence boxer who went through that story. So that's what it's based on.
Okay, it is based on a true story then. That's what I thought.
And finally, Nocturnal Animals.
Nocturnal Animals, second movie with Amy Adams in 2 weeks. This one we were talking about, we actually talked about it briefly last week. Her ex-husband is played by Jake Gyllenhaal. She wrote a book accusing Jake Gyllenhaal of doing horrible things, and mystery unfolds, and Michael Shannon is in it, as I mentioned last week, and he plays a weirdo.
Mm-hmm. You never see that, but this is a recommend, right?
Yeah, very good.
Yeah. Godfather almost sold out, 9 tickets left, but 1941 is your December selection, Tuesday night, December 6th. Get your tickets now for that.
Yeah, at carmike.com, C-A-R-M-I-K-E. And this is a really one of my favorite Steven Spielberg movies of all time, and I think it's one of his most underrated. See if you agree with me on this one, Steve, because it's this crazy, insane comedy with an all-star cast. I always thought of this as Steven Spielberg's It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Yeah, totally. Completely agree.
Yeah.
It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World. There's great moments of brilliance separated by 20 minutes of what the hell am I watching?
But I still love it, and to see it on the big screen is going to be great. I mean, I haven't seen it on the big screen in I don't know how many years since it came out. It came out in 79.
Yeah, so. Yeah, with well,
70s. It came out in the 70s. Good lord,
70s reference. All right, coming up, more grandpa references related to me that Sandberg thought of, and I'll talk to you later. 6:32. We'll come back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I know many of you are deeply disappointed about the results of the election. I am too, more than I can ever express. I will admit, coming here tonight wasn't the easiest thing for me. There have been a few times this past week when all I wanted to do was just to curl up with a good book or our dogs and never leave the house again. But if there's anyone who knows how to pick yourself up and get back on your feet and get to work, it is Marion.
By the way, who's Marion? Marion College. Got it. That's where she was speaking last night. I thought it was like her friend Marion. That Marion, she's something else. She'll stand up when you need her. But Hillary Clinton now does not need to embark on the sad tour. The sad tour would not be helpful to Democrats. It's obviously people would like to know she's okay. She got more of the popular vote, and she didn't win. She asked for the right things and moving forward and wishing Trump well. You know, well, privately. I mean, she's a human being. I'm sure she would like him to be run over by a herd of buffalo. But the fact of the matter is she didn't win, and stepping aside is probably the best thing she can do. The reason she's out last night and making speeches, and I she still make a lot more money. Not that she and Bill need it. But there's no reason for her not to go collect as much money as possible. I see, people have asked me this past couple of days. I see no scenario. She's 69 years old. I see no scenario where she would run for elected office again or run for president when she's 73. Do you, Pat Brady?
Guess you never saw Fatal Attraction.
No. Fatal Attraction is Trump. We covered that.
I'm sorry.
Trump in the tub.
With the Clintons, you never... But I think that it's good for the Democratic Party. They're liberated from the Clintons now.
Yeah, and the question is, who are the young voices in the Democratic Party? Because that was always the rap on Republicans. the young voices in the Democratic Party, who are they when Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are still two of your front runners and Hillary Clinton is making speeches because she's Hillary Clinton?
Yeah, I think that was their problem all along. I thought this cycle we were going to get someone young, Susanna Martinez, Nikki Haley, somebody, Marco Rubio, that would be our nominee. We didn't. But I think the Democrats do have kind of a weak bench right now. The person they're talking for, Democratic National Committee, Congressman Ellison, they're pushing him. He's young and interesting, but not as deep a bench, I don't think, as Republicans have.
No, and today the governor of South Carolina is scheduled to meet with President-elect Trump about potentially the Secretary of State spot.
Here's what, and we're very familiar with patronage and giving your brothers jobs and friends, but, and I love Governor Haley, but that's probably the most important pick he's going to make, and I'm not sure, governor of South Carolina, unless you're going to get invaded by North Carolina. you spend
Wait
a lot
second.
Of
you're telling me that's a threat as well?
Well, maybe Georgia, too. You might get a two-front war like in World War II. But, and I love her. I think she's one of our rising stars. But I wanted to ask Chuck Todd, are these just patronage picks that he's making, or are these people that are qualified?
We'll get to that right after traffic and a quick break. Back with Chuck Todd from Meet the Press. $6.50, Chuck Todd, MTP Daily on MSNBC, and of course, Meet the Press, which has been on since 1847 on NBC, and Chuck does a fabulous job every Sunday with it. I'm frankly amazed, as Chuck joins us now, that the morning after the election, when you did today, and you did the requisite round of wrap-ups, maybe you extended into Wednesday night, but I'm really surprised last Thursday when you go, don't call me, don't look for me, I'll come back when I want to. When's that going to happen for you?
I think after the Trump presidency is over. I've warned everybody. I said I think the one thing about the Trump presidency is that if you like the last 15 months, then get ready for an active next 4 years. I mean, one thing about it is that it's never going to be dull.
Well, I stand by what I said, and you know how I feel about Mr. Trump, but I stand by what I said the morning after. He is the president of the United States. He won. You support the office, and you support mm-hmm. him to do the best he can possibly do. There's no upside in him failing, but you don't support or endorse the views that are reprehensible to you, and you challenge him on them, which I know you and I and everybody will do. But in addition, you don't get to rewrite all the rules. So let me ask you about this press pool problem. Everybody wanted to write this off as, can he go out for a steak? Could you explain why it matters that the press covers the president-elect?
It's when you don't know what the president is, or the essentially, and as you start, when you have a president-elect, you know, it's the moment in this country where we essentially have two presidents, two people that can move markets immediately, two people whose whereabouts is, you know, if something happens, would move markets, would shake up the world. So it really is about, I mean, in the best example is 9/11. Had there been no press pool with George W. Bush, the country wouldn't know where the president was.
Right.
I mean, and that's and guess what? That wouldn't have been good for the country, not knowing who your president is, your president not being able to address the country. I mean, you know, it is I'm first time, you know, when I had to go follow the president to Hawaii, right, for his vacation. And everybody's like, why does the press have to be with the president on vacation? We had the underwear bomber, okay? Happened in Christmas, basically happened right around Christmas. You know, and we had this setup that you never use, which is a presidential podium that's with you in the pool and all that stuff, and guess what? He had to use it. The point is that's why we're there. We're not there to harass the president in his private life. When you're president of the United States, you don't get much of one, but we're not there to harass them not and prevent them from having dinner and prevent them from going to golf and prevent them from having this. It is about the in case of emergency aspect. And the problem is you never know when that emergency is when you're president. And this is the deal. Here's the thing. If we're not doing it this way, then get used to 100 people following you all the time. We're doing this in order to limit the number of people that are disruptive.
He's creating a White House paparazzi, chasing them around
in
cars.
What he would do, and the thing is, somebody can get killed.
Right.
Nobody wants that. I mean, I hate to be that crass about it, but that's what will happen. And again, that is not good for anybody. It's not good for him. It's not good for the country. It's not good for the You know, the whole point of this is simply in case of emergency. And it's in case of emergency for the country and for the world.
The transition team gets more coverage now because that's what we do. We cover everything now. So the transition team is maybe a big problem. Maybe it's not. Maybe we need to give them the room to figure it out. Maybe they can't figure it out behind closed doors. Maybe they're choking each other. But that's the point of paying attention to this story as well. However, when it comes to his family, is the greater concern using the White House to profit the Trump companies or picking the wrong people because, you know, his son-in-law's a bright guy and his kids are nice people, but what the hell do they know about this job?
Well, at the end of the day, the president's going to surround himself with the people he's most comfortable with. And, you know, I don't have a, you know, I know I think that the thing that the taxpayer cares about is, are you profiting off of the position?
Right.
And I think that's the number one thing they have to take care of is on that aspect. But if Jared Kushner was the most important person to Donald Trump as a candidate in making decisions, and it's the person he trusts the most, at the end of the day, why shouldn't he be in the White House? So I don't see, you know, on that front. For Donald Trump's ability to continue to have credibility with his voters, I think he needs to be crystal clear on how he's going to prevent profiting, you know, have his businesses profit off of him being president. And so creating some lines of distinction, the blind trust with his company and things like that. But at the end of the day, I see no, I'd rather as a voter or a taxpayer, I'd rather see an official position for Jared Kushner than find out he's the chief advisor from the outside.
Right, you know, because so then there's a reason to be sneaky about it as opposed to a pressure to be, you know, transparent.
Yeah, you know, and look, it's not as if, you know, John Kennedy, you know, family, he surrounded himself with family advisors.
Is it clear whether that nepotism law, which everybody thinks was a Kennedy thing, technically it wasn't, but is it clear whether that covers sons-in-law? In other words, how hard are the Democrats going to fight?
It's not clear that it does. And again, I would go back to, this isn't new. During the entire campaign, Kushner was sort of the you know, the hidden hand quite a bit. So, again, I kind of think it's none of this, you know, again, he's bringing in the same, you know, in this case, he's bringing in the same person. I think on this one, I think you find a way to work with this if you're Democrats, because he's been the consigliere anyway.
Any chance that you're the Democrats, you go to him and you say, listen, we're not going to fight you on Jared Kushner, but we want Bannon gone. And would he give up Bannon?
I don't think so. Not right away. Look, he's not somebody like likes to admit defeat or admit failure, but he is clever in how he does it. You know, I heard Pat tease about trying to figure out what this Nikki Haley thing is about. This was a quiet way to tell Rudy, it's over, buddy. You're not going to be Secretary of State. That doesn't mean Nikki Haley's going to be Secretary of State, but that was Trump's way of sending a message to Rudy. I'm looking for more candidates. If I knew you, if you were going to be Secretary of State, I'd have named you already.
Right. Pat, say hi to Chuck.
Hey, Chuck, how you doing?
Good.
How's the Reince-Priebus-Bannon relationship working out?
You know, it's fine right now. And I think it's, you know, it hasn't had a moment yet. They've gotten along okay. There is less distrust than there was 4 months ago. You know, Bannon came in immediately assuming the RNC was evil completely. Then he saw the utilitarian aspect of them and sort of came to appreciate operationally what Reince and his team brought. So that thawed things a little bit, but this is a, and you know, Reince has kept his word and he has stuck by. So to Trump. So there is, but at the end of the day, Trump has, I think, more of a personal connection with Bannon than he does with Priebus. But there's an acknowledgement, and this was really where Jared Kushner played a role. There's an acknowledgement that Priebus is your best option to get things done. If you want to get things done with Paul Ryan, you do Bannon and you're never going to have any good working relationship with Paul Ryan. So, so far, so good. I just saw Ryan's yesterday. You know, he's a guy realizing that he's got the second biggest job in the world. I always tell people, after the presidency, I think minus chief of staff is the second toughest job in the government.
Yeah, I think Mayor Emanuel would tell you the same thing. Before I let you go, you and Pat knows Ryan's well as well. Is he tough enough to stand up to Bannon and Trump as two against one if he disagrees with them?
I don't know. And I'm not going to, I'm not saying that as a positive or a negative. I don't know. There's a high pressure situation. Reince has navigated tricky waters for 4 years, but that's party politics. And this is another level. Reince has a reputation of the nice guy in the room.
Well, he's from Wisconsin. They're all nice.
At the end of the day, he's got to be able to level. He's got to be able to level a boom, and that's the one thing. And Pat, I'm curious what you think. You know, you got to play backtop sometimes as chief of staff. Ryan doesn't like to play backtop.
No, he doesn't. But I tell you what, I know him well, and he's one of the fundamentally most decent guys I've ever met in politics.
Absolutely.
And
I leave my kids with him.
Yeah, Jack and Grace and Sally, just good people. So, and as I said, there, nothing bad comes from Wisconsin.
Well, but here's the thing, and I think it's an important analogy to end on. You'd leave your kids with them. I'd leave my kids with them, but I wouldn't leave my wife and daughter in a stuck elevator with Bannon or Trump. So somebody's got to be the wedge between the three, and I hope Reince is tough enough to be that guy.
Look, I think for the first year of the presidency, he's the perfect pick for this presidency. Look, every presidency is different. But, you know, this is a guy who I think is going to struggle to get along with Republican leaders, and you don't want to struggle early. You're going to have some contentious moments first in probably 6 months in, but if you want to have this for a really smooth first 6 months, this was the way to do it. And this is where I think the previous pick was a smart pick.
You have your Dolphins playing the Rams this weekend. This is a trap game. Are you concerned?
You keep trying to push the Dolphins on me. You know, I think you're just in denial that I'm a Packer fan.
I don't want to bring up the Packers again because they're not playing well, pal.
No, they're not. They're not.
Of course, they are playing three games better than the Bears, but they're not playing well. By the way, the Bears are about to lose the franchise.
We're all blaming Olivia Munn. You know, it's all her fault.
You know what was great yesterday? It was Tony Romo. Tony Romo's speech yesterday is one of the best major athlete speeches you'd ever want to hear. We'll play it later, but stood up like a man and said, yep, the best thing for this team, even though I don't like it, is being the backup.
It is. Look, I think I admire Romo's competitiveness. I just worry about him as a human being. I don't know if he should come back on a football field.
I agree. He's made of the same material that Derrick Rose is made of.
I love him. Yeah, God love him, and I love the competitiveness. And if you were as close to the promised land as he has been so many times, you'd probably want to keep fighting. But, you know, something tells me that this is somebody trying to send him a message. Tony, please don't go back on this football field, man.
We're waiting for the announcement from Hallis Hall that the Bears have signed him. Let me get Reince Priebus to talk to Tony Romo. You got a plug for Sunday?
We're getting there. It's going to be a great show, that I promise. Actually, I'm going up to Macomb County tomorrow to go find those Obama-Trump voters. I think that's the most interesting aspect of this election, where the Obama-Trump swing voters.
They did
exist. They're all over Iowa, as we talked about, and clearly they were all over Michigan. So
you got to come to Chicago, Chuck. There's a lot of stuff going on here.
There always is a lot of stuff going on there.
We'll keep an eye on this until you make it to town. Thank you, buddy. Chuck Todd, NBC News, does politics better than anybody, and Meet the Press on Sunday, MTP Daily on MSNBC News. Next.
The Steve Cochran Show.
There are people who would want to leave Eastern Aleppo after being trapped in what has become this giant kill box, as it's been described. The situation has never been so bad, according to activists in Eastern Aleppo. And it's not just this military campaign that seems to have started again, that people are facing this indiscriminate bombardment of their neighborhoods. There's also that devastating humanitarian situation that is only going to get worse, as we've heard the warnings from the UN, with people running out of almost everything.
If not for great reporting and some great writing, how much would you know about Syria? How much do you know about Syria? I mean, I challenge you to get more involved than anybody in official capacity so far has been involved. And what are the Trump folks going to do about this? Certainly, you could argue the Obama folks haven't done nearly enough The current Chicago Magazine, the new December edition with Chicagoans of the Year, features an amazing story about John Kaler, Samir Attar, and Zahir Salul. Pronunciations, please forgive me if I've messed up any of those. But Dr. Salul joins us now. These are the combat doctors, and I know you're on the way to the airport. I appreciate you taking a minute for this. How are you?
Very good. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for being on. 14 medical missions to the land you were born and raised in. What keeps you going back?
I think it's my duty. I'm a physician and advocate at Christ Medical Center. I'm a critical care specialist. And what's happening in Syria is the worst humanitarian crisis in our lifetime. Children are being bombed and killed. Civilians are being starved to death, like what's happening in Aleppo. And as a physician, it's my duty to help. Maybe my government could not stop the bombing, but I can do something. And that's why we went into that mission with Dr. Kaler and Dr. Al-Attar. It's terrible.
There is there's a terrific documentary called The White Helmets about civilians have been trained to do triage-type care, emergency care. But there's a saying that I think in the story is attributed to Dr. Attar. It's a saying in Syria that if you kill a doctor, it's as good as killing 100 soldiers. And how many doctors are left or how many are willing to stay?
According to Physicians for Human Rights, more than 750 doctors and nurses were killed in Syria. It's becoming the new normal that a hospital is bombed in Syria. No one is really talking about these issues. In Aleppo, there's 30 physicians only left to treat 300,000 people under siege and being bombed. I just spoke with one of the nurses yesterday and who was telling me that one of his friends, who's a physician, was injured yesterday because of a bombing. And they're expecting the worst. They're running out of food and medicine. There is no anesthesia medicine. There is no IV fluid. And the situation is horrible. And I think as physicians, as humans, we do not have to accept that. We should tell the world that what's happening in Aleppo is not acceptable. It's not only affecting Aleppo, by the way. It's affecting us. The anti-refugee sentiment, the extremism, the terrorism, the xenophobia, all of this is happening because of what's happening in Syria, and we have to stop it.
There is the continued statements coming out of Russia, and it happened again yesterday after bombing another hospital where children died, that Putin says, yeah, we got nothing to do with it. We have nothing to do with it. The politics matter because of the leadership and the ability to intervene and the choice not to in any extended way so far. Is there any belief on your part or the people you know and grew up with and love that Russia is not involved and not backing this?
Russia is perceived as an occupier in Syria by the majority of people. When I talked with the doctors yesterday in Syria, in Aleppo, they're telling me that Russian jets are bombing the hospitals. Russian missiles are bombing their neighborhoods and killing their children. There was a recent bombing just last week of a school in Idlib called Ahad School, where 30 children were killed while they're in the school. Today, there was a statement by the teachers in Aleppo who are asking the world, basically, they're saying, please stop bombing schools, stop bombing children in schools. So, yes, Russia is perceived as an enemy, an occupier that is committing war crimes every day. And it's a superpower. It's a country that is a member of the Security Council. By the way, they're looking also at the messages that we are sending. Putin, before this last attacks, talked with President-elect Trump, and it looks like to the outside world that he received the green light to bomb Aleppo again after the call with President-elect Trump, and this is not acceptable.
This is why appearances matter in politics. You can't take that phone call and have what happened happen. As President-elect, he needs to hold a press conference last night and say, I'm outraged by this, I won't support this as president, and I'm going to fight against this, because the Western world has failed your country, haven't we?
Well, my country here is the United States, and I care about our...
Your homeland, where you grow up.
Definitely. And I think this is what's happening in Syria is a genocide, and we should not accept that, and we should stop this genocide. We are still the superpower of the world, and we have a lot of things that we can do as citizens and as a government to stop the bombing of Aleppo. I think President-elect Trump has the responsibility to say to the world that what's happening in Aleppo is not acceptable. He commented that he will not receive Syrian refugees in Syria, and he said that he would like to keep Syrians in Syria. The bombing in Aleppo will not keep Syrians in Syria. By the way, the 300,000 people who are under siege in Aleppo, among them 100,000 children, are down from 1.5 million before the crisis. That means 1.2 million people from Aleppo became refugees. Some of them are in Europe, some of them are in Turkey, and some of them drown in the Mediterranean, and some of them will be resettled here in the United States. So if we want to stop the flow of refugees, according to President-elect Trump, then we have to protect civilians in Syria, and we have to stop the bombing.
80% of a city the size of what? Dallas, Texas? Something like that? Gone.
Yeah.
Just gone.
Yeah, I mean, it's gone. I mean, the Aleppo is a historic city, 7,000 years old of heritage. It has the longest bazaar in the world. It's the city that is at the end of the Silk Road. It has many languages and very diverse. By the way, Aleppo is the city that opened its arms and hearts to the people who fled their genocides, to the Armenians, to the Albanians, even to the refugees from the Second World War, because it was at that time safe. And nowadays, it's, you know, the world is witnessing the extermination of this historic and major city in the Middle East with indifference, and this is very hurtful.
And this is just, these are people just like you and I are. These are people with children and families, and they want the same stuff we want. And they are living through a nightmare every day while the rest of the world just pretends it's not happening. It's just outrageous. What about the Arab world? What has the Arab world done to help fight this?
Well, I mean, the Arab world is busy with its own problems. And I think what's happening basically that the neighboring countries around Syria, Jordan and Lebanon and Iraq and Turkey have received millions of refugees, and their resources have stretched very thin. What's happening in Syria because of the war and because of the Iranian and the Russian intervention is affecting the national security of these small and countries. And they are looking for leadership, and the leadership usually they get it from the United States. And we have not been providing leadership in this crisis, so there was a humanitarian crisis in our lifetime. You mentioned the normal civilians. I just want to mention a story of a child that I've seen in my last medical mission. His name was Ahmed. He was in his house when a barrel bomb fell on his house, and he was pulled from under the rubble. He had spinal cord injury and lung contusion. I saw him in the intensive care unit in a hospital that is underground, and he was breathing really hard. We had put him on life support, and after a few days, his heart gave up, and he stopped breathing, and he died. There's 50,000 children in Syria that have been killed since the beginning of the crisis. And I believe that our country care about humanity. They care about environment. They care about many issues. And we have to care about the people in Syria because it's affecting our life and because it's the right thing to do.
Amen to that. Please stay safe. Thank you for everything you're doing. And I want you to know that you're always welcome here to continue to get the word out. But for everybody that's listening, I don't care if you're Democrat, Republican, Independent, or anything in between, this has to matter to you. And this is a time where I hope you urge everybody that is in office, everybody that's leaving office, and the office of incoming President Trump, that this matters to you, and you want this to stop. 50,000 dead children. If that doesn't get your attention, I don't know what will. Doctor, thank you.
Thank you, Steve, for having me. Thank you.
Dr. Zahir Salul, again, a critical care specialist at Advocate Christ Medical Center in Oaklawn. And by the way, Obama doesn't get a pass on this. It doesn't matter what your belief is that he made the problem worse with a red line quote or he did not. In the last couple of months of his presidency, with the power of the presidency, he can act as well, and he needs to be louder about this, much louder about this.
The Steve Cochran Show.
People become very frustrated. They become angry, and that gets reflected in the political process. And I think that's part of what was taking place during this recent election. People were sick and tired of the status quo. Now, look, I understand anger, and some people might have been angry when I was president. But anger shouldn't drive policy. What needs to drive policy is what's best for the people who are angry. And how does that benefit people in our country and in the countries in the neighborhood?
As always, in times of crisis, we turn to the wisdom of George Bush. Thought he made a lot of sense, kids. If President Bush, the son, is making a lot of sense, do we need to take a breath and give Trump a chance to make sense? I'm just saying. For those of you who may be new to the show, no, I didn't vote for Trump. At 7:42, Eric Adelson joins us. There's a larger problem, Eric, and Eric's on the road. Good morning to you, by the way.
Good morning.
There's a larger problem, by the way, and that's that the youngest Democratic leader at this point appears to be a character from Harry Potter. Where's the youth in the Democratic Party?
Oh, you know, they're there. There's a lot of new members that were sworn in. I love the kind of calamitous talk. You know, Monday before the election, it was the Republican Party is dead, decimated, gone, and then 24 hours later, it was Democrats have no bench. They're destroyed, decimated. They can't do anything. You know, look, this is a pendulum nation. We know that. I think a lot of people were shocked, to say the least. Democrats, you know, at this similar time after George Bush was reelected, there was a young state senator who became a U.S. senator who ended up president of the United States. So these things change pretty fast.
We have to hope, right? Because between Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and others, the most money made by Democrats in Washington would be through the congressional Deadpool. It's a bizarre turn of events in the last 10 days. Pat, say hi to your friend, Eric.
Hey, Eric, I got to give the Republican Party assist with President Obama, though. We helped him along in 2004 pretty well.
Yeah, no, that's true. You did. I will tell you guys, being in D.C., you know, I know Pat's been here a lot. I spent a lot of time here. It's got a weird vibe right now. And, you know, I was just thinking walking around yesterday that being here on inaugural day in 2008, that sense of, you know, kind of hope and opportunity and newness. And now there's this just sort of sense of anxiety and weirdness. So I don't know. It's bizarre.
Hey, Eric, when I was living out there when President Clinton won, when I went for a run around the mall, virtually everybody was wearing a Clinton Gore T-shirt. Is that same?
Yeah, you seeing any Trump paraphernalia in Washington?
Bandwagon jumpers.
I'll tell you what, you see the Make America Great Again paraphernalia. I don't know if people are buying it. I've seen a couple cars with the bumper stickers. It hasn't really descended yet. You know that feeling. I remember being here when in 2000, a little bit right after Bush won, and the cowboy boots and the fur coats and the cowboy hats started showing up. We haven't quite seen the gold elevators and the red Trump hats yet, but I guess it's coming.
The idea that Vice President Biden, who I think you know I'm a big fan of, came out and said, look, we're going to be okay. Washington's going to be in fine hands. This is after his meeting with Mike Pence. And that Chuck Schumer, who has known Donald Trump forever, says he's going to support him, but he'll fight him where he needs to fight him. Don't all the other Democrats need to kind of take the same vibe to get Trump off on the right foot?
I believe they do. I mean, you know, I said to my daughter who wanted to go out and protest and stuff, and I said, that's fine to go protest, but you can't say he's not my president. You know, that's the one thing you can't do. And I think Democrats would be wise to take Biden's advice, because the fact of the matter is it's a constitutional system. The presidency is bigger than one person, and we better respect the result, even if we don't like it. And then you fight like hell when you don't like what the guy's done. I do think some of this transition criticism, to be frank, is a little unfair at this point. I think you got to give him a little bit of rope and see how he puts it together. There was one funny comment, I think it was on social media, where it said, though, that the folks he is collecting, if you want to imagine what the White House will look like, think of the bar scene in Star Wars and in the West Wing.
Yeah, that's not scary at all. Yeah,
no, that's not scary.
No, it's fine.
The flute and all that stuff. But look, I do think Democrats need to say he's the president, and we're going to fight him where we disagree. But this notion of, you know, trying to discredit and disqualify in a lot of ways the Republicans tried to do to Obama for a long time, that's just not something Democrats are going to do, nor should they.
Hey, what about this potential challenge to Nancy Pelosi? I saw Tim Ryan, the potential challenger, on the news last night. Pretty impressive guy. Is that for real, or is that just posturing?
No, I think that's some frustration. I think it's kind of what you're seeing is they need to lash out at someone. You know, the fact is the House Democrats did pick up seats, maybe not as many as they wanted, but it's awfully tough, Pat, as you know, when the top of the ticket's running as poorly as it did, to do a lot better than that. But I think there was a caucus meeting I heard yesterday morning. Pelosi ran it. There was some opposition and some kind of flailing about. But what I'm told is they don't really have a plan and they don't have any votes. I don't think there's much question that Pelosi will be reinstalled as leader.
How is that good news for the Democrats?
Well, here's what I would say is it's good news from the standpoint of when you're on war footing and you are having lost everything, you need a strong leader who can raise money and put it together. I know the optics of it may not be change and new generation and all that, but she raises a ton of money, and Democrats are going to need that going into 2018. And I think you worry if you bring in new blood at this point, facing what we're facing, that you end up with a little bit of chaos.
Hey, you can criticize her for whatever from my side, but she's been a very effective fundraiser and campaigner. She really is very, very good.
Well, fundraiser and campaigner has nothing to do with doing the job. And I actually was victimized by she and Harry Reid as a fundraiser because I wrote a check to get them out of the room. Harry Reid's headed back to Vegas, by the way, and that couldn't happen soon enough. All right, so let me ask you about Mike Madigan before we run out of time, because you know what a fan I am. By the end of this year, there will be a total of 7 months that the Illinois legislature has had off. That seems like a nice vacation. He misses the meeting because he had scheduling conflicts and then shows up for a 15-minute job with the governor yesterday, which we hope took some positive steps. Who does Madigan think he's kidding, that he's working for the people of Illinois?
Well, you look, you and I have disagreements on this. I think there's blame to go around, but I think the notion that he didn't meet on Monday but met on Tuesday is a little bit misplaced. And I would just say the governor sits in the big chair, and the fact that there hasn't been a budget, I put it much more squarely in his lap than any legislative leader. And I go back to that Crane's editorial where they revoked their endorsement of Rauner, and they said by any measure the state is in worse shape than when Governor Rauner took office. And I don't think you blame Mike Madigan for that.
Well, but I listen, there's only so much the governor can do when the most powerful man in the state is Mike Madigan, my opinion, but I think it's pretty easy to back it up, and he blocks whatever is happening on every level when the governor continues to give up space. To me, this isn't about the governor versus Madigan. This is about Madigan caring about the people of Illinois and actually doing something for him.
Well, here's what I would say is, and I'd like Pat's take. I'm hopeful. I mean, they're meeting. They've got this, you know, 5 or 6 weeks until the temporary deal expires. Let's hope that, you know, now that we're past the election, that they can sit and work out a deal that works for everybody.
He'd like your take, Pat.
My take
because in this conversation, you're the reasonable one, by the way.
I agree completely, and I hope there can be something done. And I really think, and this is just my view as a Republican, I think that the tide has kind of turned down there, particularly with this labor relations ruling yesterday, where they're actually going to, some of the reforms that the governor wants are going to be put in place. But I'm with Eric. We're all sick of it. We want a budget. We want the state to work well. So I'm hoping they can all get together and work it out.
How's my pal Raja?
You know, he's good. You're going to love this, Steve. I was crossing the street, and he was coming the other way, and he burst into this big smile, and he goes, "Just call me Raja."
Literally crossing the street. Those were great ads. Who made those ads?
Like, yeah, do you know the people that put those ads together? Those are good.
But, you know, but I will tell you, you know, it's easy to criticize this place and be cynical on politics. And here's a guy, he's so happy to be here. You know, he's so enthused and energetic, wants to do a good job. You know, I know the place has a way of beating people down, but it is sort of what you want. The guy worked really hard to get here, and he's here for orientation week, and, you know, hopefully he'll do a good job for the people in the district.
We need an influx of 22 to 40-year-olds in both parties that aren't just disgusted by the process and won't do it because of that. We need more people from that age range to get in, and we need them now. So good for Raja.
Yeah, and the last thing I would say is, you know, as I told my daughter and her generation, these teenagers, instead of being, you can be disgusted with the outcome and disappointed, but don't talk about leaving the system. Talk about getting involved.
Yeah.
And it's your country and your parties, and make a difference. You
don't,
know, you
don't get out, get in.
Something. Plus, we need clients, right, Eric?
I'd say you two are doing fine. It's 7:51. Thank you, Eric Edelstein. And what's your company, Eric?
AL Media Strategy.
AL Media Strategies, the official AL Media Strategies of this program.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Again in the air, got a left field line, a long reaching into the stands and couldn't get it. He's littered with a fan. We've seen this happen here before. That's awfully close to fan interference right there. The umpire's all over it.
The umpire right down there, Mike Everett's on the play. If Alou has to reach into the stands, it's fair game for the fans to catch the ball. If the fan reaches out over the field, then it can be ruled fan interference. That is very, very close.
And that's a Cub fan who tried to make that catch.
Why?
Hindsight's 20/20, or in the case of Steve Bartman, hindsight's 30 for 30, if you've seen the documentary. It won't make you feel good about Chicago sports fans. It's actually kind of hard to watch, frankly. And I'm not just talking about the part that caps in.
Yeah.
But the Cubs are doing what now? They're trying to contact Bartman?
Well, I think they're going to try to reach out to him, to Steve Bartman, and see if he's interested in I don't know in what capacity for the season, but you know, obviously with them winning the World Series, it seems to have...
Make him head of scouting? What?
maybe. It seems to have absolved a lot of people, you know what I mean? And I think that...
But he never needed absolution.
I don't think so either. Yeah. I think he's really handled the whole thing admirably.
So do I. He hasn't taken any of the money. He hasn't taken the easy outs. Chose not to talk about it. And the thing is, and a friend of mine who knows this story well told me this, and he's right. The minute he gets involved, it's all back.
Yeah. No, it's the truth. I mean, as far as he's concerned, and you know, they made the statement right after the incident through you know, he had a family spokesman. He had to go into hiding for a while. He's turned down several hundred thousands of dollars in endorsements and things of that nature.
You could probably safely say millions.
Oh yeah, probably right. Yeah, and I give him a lot of credit. A lot of people would have capitalized on it. A lot of people would have tried to take the opportunity and. You know, fame is fleeting, obviously.
Well, let's take a quick poll in the room. Pat, you would have been all over that, wouldn't you?
I would have cashed in completely.
Yeah, Mary, wouldn't you have taken the money? Huh? Sure, of course you would have.
Cash it in.
Yeah.
Cash
in. Mazer's going to cash it in. Yeah, I know Jake's cashing it in.
Of course he is.
Sandberg's already spent the money and she's left town.
It is America, by the way.
Yeah. Good call. Yeah. I wonder if, you know, they would have him come back and throw out a first pitch. Or something to that nature.
Listen,
I don't think he should do it.
I have reached out to him through every contact I've ever had, and have been turned down and stiff armed in every possible way. Yeah. I wouldn't ask again, not because he won't do the show, but because I respect the stand he's taken. The Cubs reaching out is a nice thing. If he chooses to do it, I'd support it. Mm-hmm. But for the sake of him, I hope he doesn't.
I agree with you. I think the gesture is a good gesture on the team's part to do it. I think they feel now that everything is all feely, you know, very, very good and touchy feely, that they can reach out and see if maybe there's a chance that they would do it. But I, you know, again, I think a lot of people during this whole playoff forgot how to spell Gonzalez. I saw it started with a B.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, they forgot how to spell Gonzalez. I mean, it came out B-A-R-T-M-A-N.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Gonzalez
is
with a G.
And Pryor threw his little tantrum, and Alou threw a tantrum, and it was handled poorly on every single level. That had almost nothing to do. And I still maintain, you look at the Zapruder film, Andy, the fat guy in the sweatshirt next to him is just as guilty.
Yeah. By the gravelly road.
Yeah, the guy in the sweatshirt thing next to him, he reached over as well.
Yeah, there's only 12 sets of hands that were reaching for the
Bartman
same
called
baseball.
For a fair catch. Yeah. Everybody should have backed off.
Should have been a 15-yard penalty for fair catch interference.
News next, and then Mayor Rahm Emanuel on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
8:11 now, and we continue from the Allstate Showcase Studio, the newly decorated Allstate Showcase Studio. And as we continue, Mayor Rahm Emanuel joins us in studio. It's nice to see you, but I'm a little concerned. What's in the bag?
Amy heard that I was coming here.
This is your lovely wife.
My lovely wife. And she went out to the garden today. You have kale in here. Peppers, tomato, chard, cilantro. Yeah. She says, and given the way Steve eats, this should last you all winter. It's just a bag. These are what you take for vegetables for the entire winter. In our house, this is breakfast. In your home, this is the staples for an entire winter.
She
wants the bag back, okay?
I don't blame her.
Okay,
it's
so next time I come, I got to get the bag back. But
you know,
we can
actually make
arrangements.
This is
your winter survival kit. It's a very dark winter here with Trump. So here it is, Matt. This is your tip. Put it down in the basement with a bottle of water. And that's your survival kit, okay?
As usual, thank you to Amy, your wife. She is fantastic.
I actually said
you did tell her that the smoothies you brought in, I loved
them. I did, but I said, Amy, have you ever seen or met Steve? She goes, no. I go, so how do you know this is an entire winter kit of survival? She just took a wild guess, Steve. I don't know what it
is.
Yeah,
I can't imagine.
It was a stab in the dark, and she hit the target, man.
Yeah, she's always the talent. That's exactly right. Nice to see you. Congratulations on a budget getting through. Flying colors.
Yeah, well, we're at 80% reduction in the structural deficit. All four pensions paid for. And now, highest employment in 15 years in the city of Chicago. More cranes than ever before in a decade. And our industrial occupancy is at the highest in 15 years. So, you know, the goal is showing the political will, giving people certainty so they can invest in the city, create jobs, and that's what's happening.
And 57 cranes would not be up in the city if companies weren't investing. Why are you the only one telling that story?
Because, as I used to tell President Clinton, there's a joke, so don't get upset. Okay, it's a joke.
As he looks at the Republican Brady.
Yeah. When he got red-faced and that finger would wag, I said, when it comes to the American press, the First Amendment's highly overrated. Can't imagine we fight wars to export this. So here's the thing. It's we tell people. We had an announcement about it. It was actually 48 for the year, the highest. 33 present with about 8 in the queue to go. 1,000 people building that. Those are people that middle-class jobs can support a family. That's a good thing. Is the industrial. And here's what I always say. Some people always... Oh, downtown's booming. But what about the neighborhoods? Well, your industrial capacity is all-time high. Means that's not coming at the expense of your neighborhood economy or where you have industrial use. So,
and it's all money in.
Yes, money in, investing, more people going to work. We have a community college system now. You get a B average in high school. Community college is free. Only place in the United States that's possible. Also, ready, breaking news. Your fourth graders in the Chicago public school system lead the country in reading gains. Your eighth graders lead the country.
What, am I the only one with a sitting ovation? Chime in here.
And our graduation rate is double the national norm, growing at about 3.8% a year, where the nation's growing at 2%. We now have a close to 74% graduation on its way to 82, and that's the future.
So what keeps you up at night with 57 cranes going up and money coming in because you still have a lot of bills to pay?
Steve Cochran Show.
Yeah, of course it does.
What am I going to say? What will he say when I give him that gift of Hanukkah under the right there at Hanukkah Harry? You know.
By the way, the mayor comes in. This place couldn't look more like Christmas at Macy's.
Yeah. To answer your question, Mayor.
Would it kill you to have a menorah in here somewhere?
Yeah. I'm almost going to give you the yarmulke for the Chicago Cubs at the. Yeah, there. There it is. There's your menorah. Here's my menorah.
All right. Thank you.
That's the first night.
Thank you, Arby's.
Look, here's what keeps me up at night. First, I want to keep the city moving forward. The two core issues are kind of heads and tails of the same coin. We clearly have a struggle with on the south and west side predominantly, but not limited, but predominantly, of black-on-black violence.
Right.
And that the sense that you don't see a future, not only for yourself, but the gun violence.
Right.
And it's not all over the city. About 5 districts out of 22 represent almost 70-80% of the increase. And what does it take, both from more resources from our great police department, so we're going to have 1,000 more officers, better training, tougher gun sentences, so if you're a repeat offender, you're just not a revolving door from the criminal justice system, put back onto the south and west side. Investing in our kids on an early age so they have mentors that guide them and give them a foundation. And these kids are yearning. And I would ask each of you, come participate in a BAM circle with me with these young men. Okay?
Absolutely done.
You don't have to have kale to do it. You don't have to have a tomato or vegetable.
I would consider being powered by kale.
But I'm, on a serious note, you know, Jimmy Butler does it.
I would do it in a minute.
Okay, these kids are yearning for that touch, yearning for that direction, yearning for that help. And that's an investment in our economics. But at the end of the day, it's also values. You can be down in your life. You can be, down on your luck. But there are plenty of people who are down on luck. Don't take another life.
That's exactly right.
Okay, there's a sanctity around life. And one of the things, I'm on my way to Rome as we elevate the Archbishop to a cardinal, and Chicago celebrates this.
By the way, brought the Pope a cub hat.
Yeah. What's that?
The Archbishop, he brought
the
Pope a
cub hat. I'm going to give you this yarmulke with a cub hat, and can I have that painting? Yeah, I think that's a fair trade. You know? Right. It's kind of like eBay, my personal eBay. I'll take that painting. Okay, here's the yarmulke. You know, what do you think?
It seems right. Yeah,
don't
it does
think?
Seem right.
Kind of
like a
level currency.
So when do you go to Rome?
I'm going to leave this afternoon.
Okay.
It's going to be a great trip for the city. I think there's a...
If that plane goes down, there's a lot of people, important people on that plane.
Well, you're an optimist. Well, we're going to stay out of the Ukraine airlock.
Okay. That seems like a good call by you.
Yeah,
that does seem right.
But we'll be among friends.
Exactly.
Okay? There's a positive.
You can get a budget deal on the way down.
Right, but Pope Francis talked about... Pope Francis talked about making your life about working towards good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we have to get people to see their future is within themselves. And I think that's one of the most important things, that value system.
That option has to come for kids when they're young before they take that wrong path. What do we need to do about the infrastructure to give those kids that option in a timely manner?
Well, it starts early and goes later. So first, when I became mayor, almost half the kids did not even have a full day kindergarten. And in parts of the city that should have had it. So we now have universal full day kindergarten. We making sure and also half our kids now have full day pre-K. The education that counts, because kids drop out of college in third grade. They don't drop out of college freshman year.
Exactly.
Second, we're going to make this in the 20 toughest, most difficult neighborhoods based on both poverty and violence. All 7,200 young men in 8th, 9th, and 10th grade, 3 years in a row, will be with a mentor that guides them, helps them make choices, helps them make the right choices, and has a moral foundation to do that. So they're on the right path, not the wrong path.
Huge,
and those young men... Only city to do it. Those young men will, in my view, have the foundation to get to graduation. When they get to graduation, they have a tomorrow they can think about, because a lot of what leads to the violence is the despair that there isn't a tomorrow, that all they live for is right now.
Yeah, and the notion
high school graduation and on to college is the most important thing, because you then have a horizon and you're not going to do something stupid today.
Yeah, and the notion that it's their problem, they have to fix it. It's our problem, and the only way it gets fixed is if everybody chips in.
I think it's actually heads and tails. You have a choice to make, because I'm not going to absolve you of moral responsibility. On the other hand, we as a city and a community have to come together to give you the support to make those choices.
Agree.
So they're kind of both have to work.
Yeah.
Hey, Mayor, I spent some time as a prosecutor in my younger days, and the one thing that I haven't heard a lot about, but I've heard a couple good ideas. But the profit motive in the drug trafficking is what drives a lot of this. Is there some other plan that you might have down the road to deal with that? Because that seems to me to be the root cause of...
Well, I don't think it is a very big contributor. Everybody's looking for the root. I mean, I would also say just the easy access to guns. Without easy access to gun, too many guns, too few values, that's a bad cocktail. There is no doubt economics play a role. And that's why both high school graduation, which gives you a better chance of making a living. Investing in neighborhoods. You know, one of the things we did in the budget yesterday was create a fund to invest in our economies in our neighborhood, so there's a commercial life there.
And there's an incentive to do that way versus going out and selling a dime bag.
The other thing I would say is, you should know, is we've worked with the soon-to-be cardinal of together. You know, as I always say, the cardinal and the church speak from a pulpit. I, as mayor, speak from a podium. You have to respect that difference. On the other hand, if we're both pointing in the right direction, in the same direction, we're going to get where we want to go as a community and a city a lot faster, and that's important.
I don't think there's a doubt about that, because if that's not true, you're going to have a terrible seat for the ceremony once you get to Rome.
Yeah, so don't worry about my seat, because it's going to be ahead of your seat.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Yeah, I'm going to be on TV.
And so
going,
I measure it as, look, where am I compared to Steve Cochran? As long as I'm ahead of that, I feel good.
I got to tell you, I like your chances in every day.
Remember, we're all graded on a curve, Steve.
Yeah, I need more curve. Just snacking on some kale. Who needs a smoothie when you can eat it right out of the bag?
Raw kale.
Tremendous. Mayor Rahm Emanuel is here.
Breakfast food of champions.
Appreciate the time as always. We only have a few minutes here. The Chicago Tribune says you're taxing us to death. What's your comment on that?
Well, almost the bulk of it goes to pay for the pensions that were on the way towards basically insolvency. They're now on the way to solvency. The Supreme Court ruled what we could do. I have all the new hires paying more. So the bulk of it goes to pensions. That's number one.
Right.
both at the Chicago teachers, but also police, fire, labor, and municipal. And what happened was we weren't paying it for years. So that's the bulk of it. The other thing is, second part is, when I came into the office, about 20% of the budget was out of whack. We took $635 million a year. We've taken a little over $600 million out of the system. Cuts, reforms, efficiency. They didn't mention that. And the other part of it, a major piece, was to rebuild the entire water infrastructure system, putting 18,000 people to work over the decade.
Which creates revenue again.
Yeah. And so here, my attitude is, I didn't create the pension problem. I didn't create the fiscal structural deficit. I try to fix it. They left all the way, and that's their choice, all the way to the bottom. Yes, these are, bulk of it is going for the pensions. That's after you read this blaring headline. And it's over 5 years. We've made major structural reforms. And let me say this. Passed it 48-0. Springfield has no budget. We have the lowest taxes because it went back to 3.5%. How's that going for the economy? So, you know, look, you have to reform the government. We have cut and made major reforms to the government. I've never increased property taxes or general revenue for the operating budget. Have reformed it, targeted revenue. And in fact, S&P and Fitch now have upgraded Chicago's outlook. Second is our pensions are on the place to solvency, not insolvency. And record cranes up in the air with thousands of people working. Record employment in the city. More jobs today than since 2000.
So why isn't Springfield paying attention?
No, but my point.
I get your point.
My point is, businesses invest based on certainty. They would not invest if our pensions were going insolvent. They would not invest if our structural.
Yeah, nobody's
deficit.
Putting up a building in Chicago. It's not. It's an expensive proposition unless they feel like they're going to be here.
But
for
they
a
also
while.
Make choices and they think there's a good return here because we've provided them economic and training certainty and transportation certainty. Springfield, in my view, has got to realize that their uncertainty now is a bigger drag on the economy than any one policy that anybody's espousing. And I'm for workers' comp. I'm for collective bargaining reform, have said that. But they're not more important than the certainty around a budget. And that's basic. One of the other reasons people come here, we have one of the best trained, educated workforces in the United States. We have to continue to invest in that future. That's what's more important. I'm not happy about raising taxes. Don't want to. But I'm not happy about four pensions when a commitment we made and we broke it, and that problem I inherited, fixed. Now, you have to read all the way to the back of the article to find out that the lion's share of this money went to pensions. The lion's share of the reforms, we cut this budget. We took on powerful interests to change the way we do community health care, to change the way we do garbage on a more less political sense, more like UPS and FedEx. We changed the entitlement for retiree health care. Our health care budget today is basically flat when your budgets have gone up 25% over the same time. We've made fundamental changes. I don't want to raise taxes, but I don't want our pensions to drag us into the financial
crisis. Well, stuff's got to get paid for.
And
you know, that's the thing. Taxes is the hot button issue. Yeah. The money's got to come from somewhere.
Kennedy had this one great quote, "To govern is to choose." Over decades, we postponed the inevitable. I inherited that problem. I said I was going to fix and do some hard things that people didn't want to see done, but they were the hard truths to get the ship right. Our structural deficit is down 80%. We've cut $600 million of fat out of the system. We have targeted revenue for those who use things to pay for the use, and our pensions now are on a path to solvency so people who work have the confidence that there will be a retirement. And the court ruled you couldn't make other changes. Not my view. That's the world. But today, the four pensions that were on the road to insolvency, the structural deficit, we're on our path. We're within a year and within the next 2 years, all parts of the budget will now be balanced.
Yeah, facts are a messy thing, but you have to read the entire article to get there. And
with fine print.
And I'm a fan of your optimism, too, for the city, you've always been optimistic, but there's a glow about you recently.
Maybe it's the tanning.
The kale.
it's the kale.
Could be the kale.
You should try skin.
But I like it.
More
like
than
it.
A winter's supply.
I like it. So are you going to announce that you're going to run again today, or you want to wait on that?
No, I'm going to talk to the Pope first. You know, he's a nice Jewish boy. I want to see what the Pope has to say about it. Let me see this. But here's the thing. This is a serious thing. I'm going to see what the Pope says. You know, I took 8 years of Latin. I'm ready for this meeting. Okay.
Probably more than a lot of Catholics.
Yeah, I would just say, I used to say in Latin classes, Latin is a language as dead as can be. First it killed the Romans and now it's killing me. That is the only thing I remembered out of Latin. But here's the thing. Why wouldn't you be optimistic if your fourth graders are leading the country in reading gains? Why wouldn't you be optimistic if your eighth graders are leading the country in math gains? Why wouldn't you be optimistic if your graduation rate is double the national norm and 62% of your kids?
And we don't have a teacher strike.
Yes, I mean, and we're making progress. Our financial, our economic, we have challenges, but they don't outshine one thing. One of the things we've proved over the last 5 years: there is no challenge bigger than the will of the city of Chicago and its people. And both on the fiscal side, the economic side, the educational side, our will is bigger than the challenge, and that's going to be true on public safety.
Well, that's why I want this story to get out to the country nationally as well, because the constant harangue nationally is this is the Old West and people are shooting each other in the streets. It's not true. We got big problems to solve, but there's so many good stories here, and that's why I'd love people to hear that.
There are truths. We do have a challenge on shootings. They're historic. We know they are basically in five districts or five neighborhoods, predominantly on the south and west side. We have to deal with it. We have a comprehensive strategy, as we outlined, that both starts early with our kids, resources to our great police officers who are doing an incredible job that need our support.
Amen.
We need to continue to support them to do right. They have to earn it. But they are putting themselves not only in harm's way in very difficult situations that we can't even imagine, and in a period of time where we're making change rules, they need our support to get their way through that change. We also will invest in communities, but let me say this. You commit a gun crime, you don't belong on the streets of Amen. Chicago. And there has to be certainty. And the problem is our criminal justice system has basically have thrown out the door window any sense of accountability. It's a revolving door.
Any sense at all.
And the gang members aren't stupid. They know that.
Right.
They're smart to the system that basically – I may get a slap on the wrist. And there's no weekend. You have Eddie Johnson here? No weekend. Where they don't find a shooting where the record of the shooter is longer than War and Peace.
Yeah, and how does the cop who puts that guy or takes that guy off the street not get demoralized knowing that that guy could be back on the street? Because he's done it again and again and again.
Yeah, listen. Look at the horrible, horrendous event when... the basketball player Wade, mm-hmm. Dwayne Wade's cousin,
yeah.
was shot and killed on the south side. The two brothers, who were targeting some driver of Uber, both have records, both have prior arrests for gun violence. One is 2 weeks on parole. The other one, 2 weeks. The other one is 6 months. What are they doing on the streets? Why were they not serving their full sentences?
It's insane.
Yeah, and
that's what you need to push for. You need to push for reform. Not you. I'm talking about the people listening right now. Need to push for reform to keep these creeps in jail when they are in jail.
And the other thing, especially when they're repeat, the other thing is the easy access of going to suburban Cook, Indiana, Wisconsin. You could just fill up the trunk with guns and just come and sell them. So it's both the sentencing and certainty around the sentencing and restricting the access to weapons, and then respect for our officers and respect for our children that they count too, and that's why we're going to invest in their future.
Pat, quickie.
You've got about a 9-hour flight with the most powerful people in the state. I'm going to get your bottle of wine. Let's get this budget figured out.
I think it,
can get that done?
Pat,
it's going to take more than one bottle of wine.
I was going to say, it better be a super, okay? Chianti.
We'll go with a Costco-sized box.
First of all, I need one for myself just to kind of battle up for that.
We can find it.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I do want to say one thing. I think I'm obviously not Catholic. I think, though, Pope Francis has spoken to a common humanity regardless of your faith. And in a time of intolerance, both he and the Archbishop have spoken about tolerance. In a time of exclusion, both of them have given a voice to inclusion, and that there's a commonality and common humanity in all of us, and that spark and that light needs to be drawn to all of us. And so I would just say I'm proud that our Archbishop's been elevated to a cardinal. I think it's a great thing for the city. And I think all of us need to go hear the words of the Pope, listen to obviously the homily and the sermon, and remember what's good in humanity in a time in which people are nervous based on, and I really do say this, There are individuals now who are given power who are normalizing bigotry and hatred. And I think they have a counter message that needs to be listened to.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate the extra time. And please tell Amy that I appreciate the gift very much. So hold it up for the camera.
Each of those peppers, tomatoes, and kale, and the chard, and the cilantro, that's your Hanukkah gift. I expect my Christmas gift, which is 12 versus 8 for Hanukkah.
Right, okay? I've really got to step up. And by the way, I also just quickly wanted to thank you for doing the event the other night with Bill Curtis on the air. We talked about it off the air. But 47 radio stations cooperating on anything is news. Right. And the fact that we were able to get some good news out about the city. And I just hope you'll do it again.
Ready.
You give us access, and we'll do it again at some point soon, I hope.
I just want, so Bill Curtis did not get his winter supply bag of kale. You did.
Well, you know what, and I appreciate that, yes. And by the way, you may have a better seat, but thanks for the ranking.
Yeah, I can't wait, man. When I'm there in the Vatican, right next to the Pope, I'll be thinking of you, Steve.
You know what, no you won't.
You're right.
That's the most political thing you said since you sat down here. thanks. Back in a moment with the big story at 720 WGN. It's the Wintrust Community Banks Hour, and I believe we have Sheriff Tom Dart with us now. Do we have a phone that works, Sheriff Dart?
Yeah, I can give you a traffic update, too. Ashland is not going real well right now.
Well, good. I'm glad. Not that Ashland's not going well. I'm just glad that we connected.
happy to help with your traffic update. It's the downside of driving yourself not having a security detail. I have difficulty juggling phones in traffic.
It's just fine. We forgive you, and welcome back to the program. We're just talking about your efforts to make sure that the Cook County Jail is what it's for and not a mental health institution of a different name. That's not why you made a bunch of news this week, but since I brought it up, what's the level of progress there?
You know, minimal, Steve. That was the reason why I sort of was talking about changing our whole bail system is that, you know, we have a lot of good people, don't get me wrong, that are trying at different levels to do things here, some more so than others. But at the end of the day, we still face overwhelming numbers of people that all of us, I think, collectively would say, whether it's because of a mental illness or just because they're poor, we all say jail is not the place for them. It's an outrageous waste of money. It's not thoughtful. It's not humane. And then on the other hand, we have scenarios where happen all too often where guys charged with gun crimes have heavy bond set, but they make it because guess what? They're in the middle. They're in a gang. They're involved with dope dealing, so they can get access to $10,000. And so we have days where we'll see gangbangers walking in with $10,000 to bail themselves out, who then go out and shoot somebody else. And we'll have someone needing $100 because he stole something. Where worst case scenario, he gets out and he maybe will steal something else. He sits in the jail. So we're trying to go in a different direction here where the money is not going to be the factor. If you're a bad person, you stay in jail. If you're not, you get out.
I think it's brilliant. I also think it's so out of the box that you're going to have a lot of people going, hey, wait a minute. So cashless bonds, who's fighting you on it or who's trying to knock it down already?
You know, Steve, it's going to be one of those ones where there's going to be a high educational curve here where it's going to have to bring people up to speed because a lot of people are immediately going to say, wow, it means you're allowing all these people out. And it's like, no. What we're going to do is make this more thoughtful where they fit in one of a couple different boxes. And if you're in this box that is violent, we don't care how much money you have and how many gangbangers you know, you're not getting out. And on this other side, you're not. So I think, Steve, it's mostly going to be just the educational curve because it's really logic-driven, it's thoughtful, but it's also getting away from a tradition of cash bail that's been around for literally ever. So, and that's, I think, going to be the biggest hurdle.
Hey, Tom, you talked the other day, too, about these folks. One of the things you look at a bond hearing is threat to the community. Is that what the focus is going to be on?
Yeah, you know, Steve, Pat, the thing is that this also has the hook in it as well that for the people within the community, there's going to be a thoughtful process as well. So people who don't need to be in there, different levels of them will either be needing no supervision, some will be needing some electronic monitoring, some will be needing some drug rehab or some mental health treatment. But the whole thing is to sustain them while they're out, so they're going back and forth to court, dealing with their case, and they're not committing new offenses because we're addressing what the underlying problem is.
So if you are able to get this beyond a really good idea to start moving down the road, is there a timeline for it? Have you been able to cost it out?
Yeah, you know, Steve, it's interesting because in some of the jurisdictions they've done it, they've had really, really incredible savings on right at the beginning of it because they were able to clear out entire divisions of jails and things like that. But there also is the other part of it where you have to have the sustained group of folks who are watching them in the community as well. So the numbers, I've not been wanting to throw around because, I could be disingenuous and just say, you know, in this jurisdiction they saved $60 million, which is what they did, but they also had a lot of support systems already in place, and we'd have to pay for those. So the actual hard number will be tricky, but there would absolutely be immediate savings. Absolutely, I can tell you that from a guy who's in the jail all the time, that there'd be people that won't be costing us $150 to $300 a day. So we'll have those savings there. It's just going to be a little bit tricky because we're going to have to get this through Springfield. And as I think you guys might be aware of, I think you talk about it every once in a while, that place doesn't exactly operate like a finely oiled machine too often.
You know, I never bring it up.
Tom, that makes complete sense. So you're going to be putting the violent offenders, they're going to stay in jail. And the people
that's the point, right?
The retail theft, the guy that stole the candy bar.
Well, but people need to wrap their heads around this. Yeah. If you got a $100,000 bail and you need $10,000 in cash, the bad guys who are going to shoot somebody 10 minutes later can find the $10,000 in cash.
Yeah, that's
good. Oh, yeah, you know, Steve and Pat, you know, I mean, I can give you hundreds of anecdotes, and they're all real unfortunate, but remember when that poor little boy was shot, cold-blooded, Tyshawn Lee?
Sure.
Where he was in Georgia? Well, his Pierre Stokes, who I believe is his father, there was talk about this was a retaliation because of something the father had done.
Right.
Well, the father had been in on a gun case. He came up with the money, and he'd gotten out and got involved with another gun case. And so these are cases where they have ripple effects throughout communities, too. So it isn't just, you know, a gun offender got out and, you know, was involved in a dope case. No, we're finding that the gun offenders where they're getting out are getting back involved with gun cases. And some of them are now brought back in on murders, attempt murders. It just, you know, it makes no sense. But if you think about it for a second, a judge in another one set a bond of it was over $100,000. The guy came up with $10,500 and walked out the door and then got picked up for shooting three people.
Okay?
Sounds like a scooter just went by.
No, that wasn't me either. That wasn't me.
All right, I'll let you go on this. Who has political jurisdiction over this? Is this just the county, or do you need the state involved as well?
You know, Steve, that's the thing that's going to be tricky, Steve, is that I do have to get the state to make changes in the bond statute, and that's where just with everything else floating around on there, I don't know if now is a good time for them as far as like a tutorial on this, but there's never been a better time. The governor has talked repeatedly about juvenile criminal justice reform. This would be right down Main Street for him. So I think if I can get the educational curve up to where it needs to be, I could get a lot of support from a lot of people on this.
Sheriff Tom Dart, thanks for the time, and be careful out there. Watch for those passing ships.
I will. Thank you, guys.
All right, see you later. That's Tom Dart. And, you know, every time I talk to him, it's impossible not to like him and impossible not to get behind this stuff he's trying to do. Because in a large way, he's trying to reinvent the penal system and everything that goes on at Cook County Jail, one of the largest jails in the country.
Mental hospitals now, too.
When you talk about the reform the mayor has to do in the city, the reform that he's trying to get done there is exceptional. So we'll certainly help him out any way we can. Try to fire you guys up to get Springfield to get off the dime and do this. Seems like a no-brainer, but guess what? Some people may block it. Pat Brady, where do you work again?
Next Generation Strategies. Thank you.
Thanks for the extra time today.
Anytime, thank you.
Pat will be back because we'll have plenty to talk about.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Love Chipotle. They make a really nice burrito over there. It's so terrific that the employees can't stop eating it. The employees are never working. They're always in the dining room eating. Ever walk in there, you're like, where are the workers? The only guy behind there is the guy cutting chicken, just looking at you. Right? He's not trained on burrito building. And I'm watching the people order. I mean, there's a sneeze glass there, right? But people always hook the arm over the glass. I'll have corn. I'll have more corn. Just say corn. It's not soundproof. It goes right over the glass. Get your claw out of the salsa.
9:10 in a world filled with trouble. As we continue on the Steve Cochran Show. The only hope for America may be Sebastian Maniscalco. He's been out there, man. He's been out there. He's been asking what's wrong with people. What's wrong with people? Why would you do that? He's going to be at the Chicago Theater, one of the hottest comics in the country. Isn't it great to be hot? Isn't it great to be one of the hottest comics, Sebastian?
It is great to be hot, but, you know, coming from a family that's constantly negative, you know, it's always, you know, this ain't going to last, so just enjoy it while you got it.
You got 2 weeks, Sebastian. That's it. 2 weeks. Three tops. Chicago Theater, week after next. Six shows. Man, that is a beautiful theater. Have you ever played that room?
Yeah, I was there for the first time last year and had a blast there. Just such a great, great theater, and, you know, just the decor, and very intimate. It's 3,500 seats, but I feel like I'm playing to 1,000 people. So, yeah, enjoy it immensely.
And the question, of course, is why would you do that? Why would you do that? This follows up your Aren't You Embarrassed special from a couple of years ago. You know, the problem with getting hot, Sebastian, is you got to write faster than ever.
You got that right. And, you know, I always, you know, writing new material and coming up with new stuff. I mean, I'm getting, I'm having a baby May 1st. So now we got,
hey,
some,
congratulations.
You know, pregnant. Thank you. Thank you. So it's our first child. And, you know, life is comedy. So as life happens, I'm always kind of taking note and writing material. But yeah, you're right. You know, when you're hot and people have seen you before, they want to see new material, but they also want to see some of the favorites. So I try and blend the two so people get the best of both worlds.
What's your free bird? What's your free bird moment? What's your bit you've been doing for a while that everybody that knows you that comes to the shows wants to see?
The one right now is the doorbell bit, which I did in 2012. Sure. At the What's Wrong With People special. So people seem to gravitate towards the doorbell ringing today opposed to 20 years ago. I mean, it kind of hits a multi-generational group of people where, you know, the grandmother could relate, the mother and the granddaughter, everybody kind of has lived that moment. So yeah, that's my that's the one people want to hear. And there's a real old one I used to do about TJ Maxx, Ross for Less, going into those discounted department stores, everything being on the floor and everything's irregular. So, yeah, those are those favorites. But, you know, like I said, you got the new ones that are just as good, if not better, I hope, as I get older and more seasoned as a comedian. You know, I just you become more savvy in how you put your material together.
Yeah, well, and every audience is different. I mean, you got six shows and you got six different audiences, and you know, you roll with it on the night. SebastianLive.com on Facebook, Sebastian Comedy, same thing on Twitter at Sebastian Comedy. You know, have you spent any of the famous money yet? Because one of the coolest things about starting to make it or making it is, you know, you get some cash you never thought you'd have. Have you bought anything just for yourself?
Have I bought anything for myself? Well, we just remodeled our house, so...
No, that's not for yourself. Have you wasted any celebrity money on you?
Not really. Not yet, man. Like I said, I constantly got my immigrant father in the back of my head going, stash it. Just stash the money. And I like to spend money on my family, though, and the people close to me, so... I tend to spoil the people around me a little bit. But no, I haven't really bought anything for myself. You know, my wife and I love to go on vacation, so we took a really nice vacation to Italy, and yeah, I mean, I'm just enjoying life right now. Maybe I'll buy a car next year for myself, but right now I'm just touring around and having a ball.
As a card-carrying leader of Italians around America, as you now are, do you feel Italian when you go to Italy, or do you feel like an outsider?
Well, you know, I don't speak the language quite well, so I do feel like a foreigner, although I do have this attachment to Italy, and I feel like I am in a place where I come from, and it's very familiar to me, but it's quite embarrassing that, you know, I grew up with a father who is from Sicily and still don't know the language fluently, which is something that myself and my father are to blame growing up. We just never spoke Italian around the house. My mother was from the States, so it's not like my mother and father were speaking Italian. And my father's more Americanized than I think I am. He's a beautician.
he cuts hair, so it's like he's.
What does he tell the family back in Sicily? He does.
My father was bald with a ponytail growing up, so that's the type of dad I had. I mean, he came home, you know, not with a football, but with hairspray. So.
But Sebastian's got a beautiful head of hair, which you'll see at the Chicago Theater. We're just getting off of summer here, I assume, because, you know, it's the law. You had to attend a couple of Italian weddings this summer, didn't you?
Yeah, I was always there with the Italian weddings. You know, it's a big thing when you get an invitation to an Italian wedding because, you know, Italians don't bring gifts. They bring cash and an envelope, and they got to figure out how much they're going to give based on where it's being held. Well, what are they having for dinner? You know, it's a whole process. So the Italian weddings, you know, is so extravagant. You know, I mean, I married a Jewish woman, so it was like matzo balls and meatballs at our wedding.
Yeah, the two sides of the room had to be staring at each other the entire night.
Well, two different cultures. I mean, the Jews and Italian are very similar, but I mean, when it comes to weddings, I mean, you know, Italians, they got the ice sculpture, the sweet table, they got the Italian band, and then, you know, when the Jews picked me up at my wedding in the chair, the whole Italian side was like, "What? He get him down? He's gonna hurt himself."
Well, the Italian side, they're all talking with their hands, crying one minute, fighting the next. The Jewish side, they're going, "Don't make a fuss. If you see a piece of cake, it'd be nice."
Yeah, all the Jewish, it was crazy because. You know, we had a rabbi and a priest, and, you know, the priest is asking me to sign the ketubah, and my father's like, "Don't sign nothing, you sign that, and you're Jewish." It's like, oh, my God.
Well, I can't wait for you to be a dad, man, because it's the greatest thing that'll ever happen to you, and bonus, it's a lot of material.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's going to be great. And having a baby now puts me and my wife in contact with, like, other parents. You know, the kid goes to school, and then now we're going to have to deal with the parents of the other kids that are hanging out with my kids. So it's ripe for material. We can't wait.
What are you going to do the first time your kid gets left off a birthday party list?
You know what? I'm gonna be the type of parent that, you know, this is life. You know, you don't get invited to everything.
Wait a minute. You're talking about common sense good parenting. I thought you were going to call one of your Sicilian relatives to make drive by and go, "Hey, let's make sure this doesn't happen again."
No, you know what I'm going to get involved with, though? If the kid is ever, like, bullied or anything like that, I'm going to have to pay a visit to the parents' house and go right to the parents. I'm not into that. I got bullied by a girl in my when I was in sixth grade. I remember getting on the bus and I sat in the girl's seat in the back seat. It was the first time I ever took the bus before, and she told me to go sit in the front, and the whole ride to this school I was getting hit with spitballs in the back of the head, and I came home, I told my dad I'm getting hit with spitballs, and he just said, "All right, don't wipe it off, and then that will go away soon." There was no apparent involvement, but I don't know. I feel like I might be a little different.
The one thing, and, you know, my kids are older, but the one thing I'd advise you, too, is the homework gets harder year after year after year. And eventually, you may not do this, I started cheating off other parents. I just find out where the other smart parents were, and I go to their house and see what they were doing.
Oh, that's great. No, that sounds like something I would do, because I know damn well I'm not going to be able to help my kid with the homework coming home.
Well, that's why you're in
I'm
show business.
After third grade, yeah.
If I could do the homework, I'd have a real job. Well, listen, I couldn't be more excited for your success. You've worked your butt off. You deserve it. You've earned it. And looking forward to seeing you at the Chicago Theater coming up. Six big shows week after next. Is it week after next or is it next week?
Yeah, the Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah, it's next week. Yeah, next weekend.
Shows, so, yeah.
And there's a limited number of tickets available. You get those, you're going to be good to go. And you know what I always say? Listen, if you got a date conflict, you can't do it. Buy the tickets and hawk them. You know, sell them for more. Sebastian will mind.
I don't know why. Just buy them and then get rid of them on StubHub.
That's all you need to do. Come on, get serious. And you can see his special on Showtime as well. But here's the deal. SebastianLive.com, Facebook or Twitter, Sebastian Comedy, and Chicago Theater Tickets. We'll give you the link for that, too. We'll throw it up on my social at Cochran Show. All the best, man. Nice to have you on again.
Thanks for everything, and have a nice Thanksgiving.
See you. Sebastian Maniscalco. Steve Cochran Show continues. We will have a guy from an organization I think you should know, and a hero, another fine American. Jack Person will join us here in a few minutes from Naperville Response for our vets. Troy Murray is still to come. We've got to do the Wang Dang Doodle picks, too. All on the way on 720 WGN. 927, Steve Cochran Show continues. A couple of weeks ago, I had the honor of being asked to speak for Naperville Response for our vets. And, you know, I like to think the show is pretty connected, and we kind of have our finger on the pulse of all the terrific charities supporting military causes around the area. But these guys, friends of mine, they were doing a great thing. And until they told me about it, I didn't know it was happening. So that's why I want you guys to know about Naperville Response for our vets. The president standing by, Jack Person. Good morning, Jack. How are you?
Good morning, Steve.
Nice to talk to you again. And again, thanks for having me out when we did our thing a week or two ago.
Thank you so very much. It was a great evening. It was a very successful evening, and we attribute a lot to the White Eagle Country Club and you as our future speaker.
Thanks for that. And tell people about your time in the service before we tell people what you guys do as an organization.
I was a Vietnam vet, United States Navy, USS Iwo Jima, and had the opportunity not only to serve our country in Vietnam, but our ship was selected to do the pickup of Apollo 13 as that splashed down in the Pacific Ocean.
How cool is that? I'm telling you. It's unbelievable. Being a part of history right there. Naperville Response for our vets does a unique thing in my world for the folks in the western suburbs. And as you listen to this, I want you to think, because you'll have the same impression I had. Well, what a cool idea. They have a template that essentially is established, because when you do this, you make great choices, and then you make a few mistakes, and you figure out what works or what doesn't. And, organizations listening around the country or even locally in other burbs, you can get a hold of these guys, and maybe you can do it for your geographical area. But the mission is what?
The mission is our organization assists veterans and their families who are in need of raising we raise money for donations, building materials, professional labor, and we coordinate the needs they have for housing repairs. It could be a roof, it could be windows, it could be widening a door for a bathroom so a wheelchair could have access, replacing a tub with a shower. But it is our organization, not one dime is paid by the veteran. We handle all the costs. We find the professional labor. We get donations of materials from local businesses, and we've been doing this for we're going on our seventh year now.
It's a really cool idea because, you speak of the dignity of coming home to your family and being able to do things. If you got a leaky roof, you got a plumbing issue of some kind, you got something going on at the house that needs fixing, maybe you're not making enough to do it, maybe you can't figure out a way to pull it off at this point, you guys... You take care of that problem with them, and you check that off their worry list, right?
We do. You know, interesting enough, then Mayor Prado went to a home in our community, downtown Naperville, where you wouldn't suspect that there would be a lot of need, but a World War II veteran asked for some work to be done on his gutters that they were falling off the house. When he went in the house to have a cup of coffee with him, he could look through the kitchen and he could actually see daylight.
Wow.
So called Naperville Response, and within an hour we had one of our representatives out there, and within 2 days we had a new roof on their house as well as the gutters.
So how can people help? I mean, obviously cash is appreciated, and you can do that through the website?
We can go to the website is www.nrfov.org. And you can apply. We're looking for veterans to help. We work a 20-mile radius around Naperville, and we're looking for veterans. Are people that don't always ask for help, so we're really out there looking for them and assisting low to moderate income veterans at any point that we have the opportunity to do that. So you go on the website, you can volunteer, you can make donations, you can volunteer services, you can apply on, if you're a veteran or a family member of a veteran, you can apply online, and we'll have somebody from our veteran committee reach out to that individual. They'll interview them, they'll see the need, we'll send a construction person out there to inspect the work that needs to be done, and we bring it back to the board of directors, and we take action.
It is a wonderful idea, and it's great to see the success you've already had with it. NRFOV.org. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the opportunity. And thanks for the
support. Of course. Bye-bye. Continued support, as you know.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Now another play in front. Patan shoots and scores. The Hawks got a little careless in their end of the ice. In behind the Hawks net, Kempney turned the puck over. The Jets got it back, and Patan found a loose puck off of a pass that originated from Marco Dano in behind the Hawk net, and Patan put it home, 4-0 Winnipeg.
Not good. After a couple of weeks are real good. Really, 3 weeks are real good. Hawks get off to a rough start on the circus trip. Last circus trip, by the way. Apparently all the clowns are missing. The elephants can't come here anymore. Sponsored by Chicago's own Nuveen. It's my friend Troy Murray. Welcome back to the program, and I assume you're in your hometown. Are you in Calgary?
I am in Calgary. You bet I am.
Did you grow up downtown? Where'd you grow up?
Just south of the city, about 15 minutes outside of downtown.
What was the name of the suburb, and did it have moose in the title?
It did not.
Moose knuckle, moose hoof.
Acadia.
All right, so right,
it's the Heritage Park, which is a really nice little area here with an old Stampede Western theme,
sure,
fort and everything up on a mountain. It's really cool.
Yeah, by the way, the Calgary Stampede is, where does it rank amongst tourist attractions in Canada? It's got to be top five, isn't it?
Well, I would think it's the top attraction in Canada. It's the world's largest outdoor rodeo. It's phenomenal. I mean, they have a huge parade here, and then the city of Calgary for 10 days or 2 weeks, whatever it is, it's just absolutely jammed. It's worth the trip here at some time in your lifetime to come up here and take in the Stampede. It's incredible.
It is pretty cool. And I've been there twice, as a matter of fact, but I never was invited to the Calgary Stampede Celebrity Rodeo. Because I'm not famous in Calgary, kids, but you are. Were you ever invited to come up and ride a bull or rope?
No, I was not.
Just figured he's one of our own.
Not at the rodeo.
Okay. All right. Yeah. The other stuff is an off-air conversation. All right. So Troy Murray, bad start in Winnipeg. It's just one game. There's nothing there to make anything of because they've been playing too well. Am I right about that?
You are, but it's a good eye opener for them that you know, they were kind of getting away with some things here for the last couple of weeks, and they were finding ways to win. 1-0 going into the third period, you kind of thought that maybe they had that in them again, but it slipped away from them. And give Winnipeg full credit. I mean, they just kept pouring it on in the third period. Didn't give the Blackhawks an opportunity to regroup it all in that game, and you know, the last 4-0, and you move on to this game, which is now a bigger game and more importance as far as points in the standings.
You know, you look at this division now, and now that Winnipeg is young and talented and seems like it's a pretty good team, it just seems unfair that the Hawks are in this division. It's so tough, and the first round of the playoffs are based on division play.
It's tough, Andy, and I'll tell you, by the way, good to hear your voice.
Good to hear you too.
You know, the NHL, when they put in the collective bargaining agreement years ago, wanted parity in the NHL. And it's taken a few years to get to where they wanted to do it. But right now, they've created the market in the NHL that they wanted to with the parity. Everybody's, if you look at the standings, nobody's out of it. There's a few teams that have had good starts to the season. Chicago's one of them. But everything is so tight right now, and for the good teams, they can't consistently be good because they have to retool because of the salary cap. So you get rid of your depth players that are great players, like an Andrew Shaw from last year that move on. Teams benefit by picking up those players. They're better. Chicago's a little bit less inexperienced. They've created exactly what they wanted to, where everybody's in the hunt, in the mix. And you look at the Central Division with all the great teams, you know, it's a dogfight. You just have to make the postseason and then go from there, because anything can happen.
It's a big picture conversation, but I would caution the NHL to keep an eye on what's going on in the NFL, because the NFL went for parity long before the NHL did, and the NFL ratings are softer than ever. And I think people get tired of 8-8 and 9-7.
Well, but that's what they wanted. They wanted to, and especially in the NHL, which is a little bit different. There's a lot of have and have nots. And you look at the small market Canadian teams where we are, you know, they've got this kid up in Edmonton that we'll see next week, a guy named Connor McDavid, who could be in a year from now, the best player in the National Hockey League. You know, they were bad, but now they're going to be good. For the Blackhawks, they unfortunately can't be that dominant team that they probably could have been if they were able to keep some of their personnel here the last several years. And I think that's a little bit disappointing to, obviously, Blackhawks fans, but to the NHL to say, well, we've got this just fantastic team. We've got the New York Yankees that are just winning year after year. But, you know, that's what they wanted to do, and that's how they created this, you know, this market in the NHL to keep everybody on an even playing field. And for them, it's working. But you're right, there's a lot of teams that are going to be around the 500 mark and within reach, and give that market an opportunity and hope that they can make the postseason.
Boy, wouldn't the Bears take 500?
Yeah.
But
let's not go there.
They like to sniff it, yeah.
You know, but the fact is, what Troy is describing makes it even more remarkable that in this era that you could pull off three cups in 7 years. It's crazy.
Steve, they've got the best core group of guys in the NHL, and I you know, have no problem saying that. If you look at all the teams that are good and have been successful with you know, Marian Hossa having a tremendous season this year, 37 years of age. Duncan Keith in his low 30s. Brent Seabrook, 30 years of age. You know, this core group of guys are getting a little bit older. But with Taves and Kane, and you know, now you got Panarin in the fold, and hopefully he's going to be here for a while, and Anisimov off to a great start this year. This core group of guys is what drives the engine, and I can't think of any other team in the NHL that can match this core group of guys. The issue has been retooling with all these young players when you have to get rid of the depth players that this team has had for so many years that, you know, groom them in. And that's why they're so valuable to other teams, because the culture in Chicago, everybody wants the winning attitude. They want those guys to walk into the locker room and kind of take control and say, you know, guys, we can do it this way. This is what we have to do. And build on that. Build on what, you know, the core group of guys have taught these guys inside the locker room. And it's been tremendous since Taves and Kane have been here, because for the, you know, the previous years before that, they made the playoffs once in 10 years and the culture wasn't where it needed to be.
Are the Hawks catching the Flames at a good time? But there ever is a good time to play a team on the road with Goudreau out and some other, some names kind of struggling a little bit.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You know, Johnny Gaudreau here is the Patrick Kane of the Calgary Flames, and he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks with a broken finger. And there's, you know, I don't know if they're making a big deal of it down in the States, because we've been up in Canada here for a little bit, but if you look at the media up here, boy, are they ever unhappy with the officiating in the NHL. And he broke his finger by getting slashed, and it was the third or fourth blatant slash in the game that was targeted for his hands. And, you know, if the NHL, and we can get into this really in depth, if the NHL wants to police the game by using their system with the referees and the Department of Player Safety, they have to acknowledge this fact, because when Calgary comes into a visiting building, they want Johnny Gaudreau and the Calgary Flames on the marquee. They don't want the Calgary Flames. When Chicago comes in, they want Patrick Kane
right.
and the Chicago Blackhawks. They want those marquee names involved, but they're failing in their own way within the league to protect those players, and it's a little bit disappointing. And Calgary is completely up in arms that they're missing their best player. So they won last night. They actually played here and won a hard-fought game. They don't have their star player, and the Blackhawks are going to have to put their hard hats on and realize that sometimes when you don't have the star players, the team works harder. So they're going to have to match that intensity and come out with a hard working effort. And if they do that, Chicago's got better skill than Calgary. That's just flat out the truth.
Calgary, Vancouver, Edmonton, San Jose, Anaheim, and the Kings all in the next week and a day. That's a tough stretch, but how about we come home 6-1? That'd be all right with me.
I think, Steve, if I'm correct in the top of my head, they've lost one game in regulation the last 3 years on this road trip.
Yep.
Once a year, so they've got the loss out of the way, so they got to steamroll through everything else here.
Just tell the guys that's what I'm looking for is a 6-1.
Oh, trust me, I'm going to put that right up on the chalkboard tomorrow morning for the guys.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Steve Cochran says.
Kane goes, that's why we don't let him in the dressing room.
Exactly.
Troy Murray, John Weideman, every minute of every Hawks game, doing great work as always. And say hi to John for us, and we'll talk to you later. Thanks, bud.
Steve, Andy, thanks for having me on.
9:52. Back in a moment. 720 WGN.
Oh, God, big baby.
That's mommy.
That's an embarrassment. Embarrassment. Embarrassment.
In a world of major market morning radio, one woman struck fear.
Big baby.
In the hearts of jovial radio talent.
Big baby.
It's Steve's mom.
Tina! Bring me the axe!
You've been warned.
That's my mommy. Let's go to the phone now. Hi, Mom. How are you?
Good morning. Don't you think the mayor has enough to worry about without worrying about your nutrition?
The mayor last 7 o'clock hour brought me vegetables. Actually, it was the mayor's wife. It was
8 o'clock hour. Just so.
It was 8 o'clock
hour. You
know
what you're going to do with those vegetables?
Yeah,
you're going to bring them right over to mommy's house, and we'll make you a nice little salad.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. How much dressing can I put on it?
None. Lemon juice. A little twist of lemon.
Oh, that'll make the kale edible if I'm in a prison camp. Hey, for Thanksgiving, we probably don't need to do this on the air, but Thanksgiving, I want you and my sisters and the whole family to come to the Double Wide in East St. Louis.
Oh, we are so thrilled.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to be great. Now, if you could bring a couple of folding chairs and just tell my brother-in-law, Ian, he's going to have to sit outside because we're short on room.
Do you have working bathrooms to host?
We have one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a double wide. We got a working bathroom.
Yeah, it's outside.
Yeah. So it's got a moon cut out of the door. All right. So here's the deal, Sandberg. How much time do we have to do this?
30 seconds.
What? What? Oh, no. All right. Here's what we'll do then. We'll have Mom pick, and we'll have Andy Mazur pick. And Andy Mazur, I'm going to turn his picks over to you, and then you can put them in wherever you need to fill for somebody.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, this is real fair.
What are you complaining about now?
Well, come on. Why can't we all pick? Hey, you're cutting into our time here, people.
Nah. Listen, Mom, your record this year has been good and then really bad. What are you planning on this week, good or bad?
I'm going for tonight's game.
Okay.
My Saints 27-14 over the Panthers.
You got a quarterback?
I certainly do, Drew Brees.
Yeah, it's a good pick. I like that pick on both counts. It's very solid. This is where your gambling habit really comes in handy.
Yeah. Good point.
Well, God knows you're not throwing any money my way. I've got to do something to earn some.
Speaking of derelicts, Andy, what's yours?
I'm right here. You want the game first?
Yes,
yes please.
Let's go with the Cowboys 31, Ravens 17.
All right. I already have a problem with that because I was going to pick that game.
Sorry.
But whatever.
And quarterback would be Ben Roethlisberger.
Isn't he in prison?
Not today.
Okay. Nicely done by you. Mom, love you. Andy, don't you love my mom?
Love her, of course.
Okay, all right.
Oh, everybody I love turns. Andy.
Yeah, okay, easy. Sound a little cougary to me.
Wow.
All right, Mom, I'll call you later. A couple minutes before 10, we're back with Bill and Wendy next. The rest of you will pick off the air, and we're back with Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN.